That was Madonna, Papa Don't Preach, and we have Joe Gunn and Dennis Sabourin online. Good morning, gentlemen. Welcome to SeawayRadio.com.
Good morning, Jamie.
Nice to be here.
So what are we talking about this morning? What's hot?
Well, Joe actually started it off in the green room before we started the conversation here with you, and he asked me what's happening up here in Ottawa, and I pointed out that some of the boys are back in town, quote from Tin Lizzy, and they're basically here for industry committee meetings on the census form, the long census form, as to whether or not the government should abandon its plans to scrap it. And I'm of the opinion that, and I've had the experience of filling out the 10-page census form, I'm of the opinion that it is a worthwhile document that helps the government in its planning for various social programs and other program needs, and it gives the statisticians the information that they need to help the government determine what level of spending they're going to direct to some of these programs. Now, Joe, you have a different opinion.
Well, naturally, Dennis, I have a different opinion, but it's not along political lines. It's the fact that what do they do with these with the results? Well, people, groups, ethnic communities, they all draw on the government for this information, so they're letting the government do their research for them. In other words, I'm paying for this research that I don't give a damn about. And I believe, and you know this, both of you, that I believe in less government. And that's my take on this. If these people want this information, let them hire their own consultants and go get it. I think it's an infringement. You know, I don't know how many bedrooms I got in my house. Well, it's none of their damn business.
Mm-hmm. The government is not obligated to sell off the information. And I'm under the impression that that's what they have done in the past is sell it off to various groups or organizations that have asked for it. They're not obligated to it, but the information is vital to the government with regards to its future planning.
It is, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well why? Look, I don't care how many Sikhs there are in Vancouver. I don't care. I never asked how many Irishmen were in Vancouver, but I tell you, if there were 10, that would be enough. And I'm Irish.
Oh, well, we know wherever you go, the rest of the country's Irish, that's for sure.
Now, hold on. Joe, you were a school trustee,
mm-hmm.
and...
So was Dennis.
You know, when, I know,
both
but I'm
of
just
us were.
Posing the question. I'm aware, but I'm just saying Joe seems to be against the census. How
no,
does
no,
the government
no.
figure out how many...
No, I'm not against the census. My God, our creator, that's why he was born in the Middle East, because they went there because of the census. That's why God was born in Jerusalem.
Jesus was born. God was always around.
Oh, Jesus. Sorry about that. I get confused with the word God and my God. Jesus.
All right, so as a school board trustee, when you're looking at budgets and funding, how do you make decisions without knowing how many school-aged children are in a given area?
We do our own.
Yeah, Joe is right there. We do our own samplings. Within the Catholic system, it's as simple as checking with the parishes to see what the registration was of baptisms, things along that line, to give you an indication as to the potential. It's never accurate, the potential number of students that might be coming into
the
system.
When they're born, we grab them, and we know where they are, and we keep track of them. The only thing that we don't know is because of the movement of kids in the system, which system they're going to enter into, and when they do, we don't know when they're going to move, and they do move. Like, they move from the Catholic to the public system and back and forth, and that's the only thing that we don't know, and we can't control that, because a lot of them move for different reasons. Don't like the teacher, don't like the area the school is in, don't like the curriculum.
Is this just another canard? We're talking about census forms instead of some of the more important issues that are going on right now in Canada? Or did that flow a Newsweek in Ottawa?
The House is not in session, so it seems to be that there are a number of issues that are coming up. I mean, yes, the industry committee got rooked into coming back to talk about census forms. There's a cry for the defense committee to come back, and let's look at the latest acquisition that the government wants to go after with regards to fighter aircraft, the F-35 or whatever its number is nowadays. And it will be interesting to see if the government is going to respond to that, because the criticism of the sole source deal is starting to mount.
Well, I was criticizing the fighter plane contract last week, but you guys were sort of...
Well, the decision wasn't out last week until Friday. The decision wasn't out last week till Friday. I'd rather comment on something that's, you know, confirmed as opposed to speculation on it. But now that it's there, I can think back to the time that we had the debate with regards to the CF-18s. And I recall that the Minister of Defense at the time was, I believe, Gilles de Montagne, a member of Parliament from Quebec City, who was also a Second World War pilot. And he won major kudos from pilots across the country when he got up at a Royal Canadian Legion forum, and someone asked him, why is it that the government is buying a twin-engine aircraft and at such a huge price? And he said, well, as a former pilot and a pilot of B-17s, I know that when you have more than one engine, your chances of coming home are that much better. And he won a lot of praise for that and support for it, and it solidified the support for the CF-18 across the country. I have a concern with this being a single-engine jet, and I don't care how much technology has advanced. We have adverse conditions throughout this country when you're flying, particularly in the north. And if you find yourself in a situation where that engine gives out, well, you don't have a backup system to make sure that you're coming home.
Joe? The F-16, whom the Americans use, the American Air Force uses, is a single-engine fighter, and they've had it in service for 25 years. It's a single-engine fighter. They brought that thing out back in the 80s, and I think that, you know, the technology, the advancements that we've had, I think one engine's enough. If it flames out, you restart it. If it doesn't, you get the hell out. It's that simple.
There goes $140 million when you're bailing.
We lost, what did we lose? We lost eight F-18s, I believe. We've lost eight or nine. We lost four or five pilots, maybe six pilots.
Yeah.
But, you know, mostly, and my association with the Air Force was kind of extensive, mostly it's always pilot error. It's very seldom the problem of the aircraft. It's the pilot thinks that he can do something. He maybe restart the engine, and then he doesn't have time to get out. I remember one time, Juan Jarachowski, who was the chief test pilot for AV Row, who died a couple of years ago, him saying when they had the old CF-100, and they were having trouble with it. And I remember him saying that the reason we're losing so many pilots is because they think they can fix the aircraft. They can restart the engines. He says something goes wrong. You've got 11 seconds, and I remember this vividly. You have 11 seconds before the aircraft is going at such a speed you can't eject. So you've got 11 seconds. So what's the best thing to do? Pull the handles and get the hell out. You can replace the aircraft. You can't replace a good pilot.
The CF-100s, they were called the Widowmakers, weren't they?
No, that was the F-104.
That's the 104?
Yeah.
Not a great track record when it comes to aircraft.
The CF-100, no, Dennis, before your time, the CF-100 was the Canuck.
Oh,
and it was black. Remember when we had the black all-weather fighter? Yeah. They were stationed at Bagotville.
Well, I actually spent a few weeks at CFB Bagotville when I was an air cadet, and I saw some of the 105s were in service at the time, so I saw
the Voodoo,
that.
Yeah,
and I was actually, when I was in the media in Edmonton, I was on the Armed Forces list of media flight for the CF-18s. But I ended up changing media outlets, and as a result, my ticket went to someone else with the company that I had worked for when my name came up. So I missed out on my flight on an F-18.
Yeah. Well, you know, I agree with both you guys on the costing, but then I have to ask you, what is the cost of freedom? You know, we rely too much on our American friends to protect us. What is the cost of freedom? Is it $1 million? Is it $1 billion?
I won't put a cost in freedom, Joe, but I will ask the question. I'll counter your question with the question. Is this really the top of the list of the forces' priorities and needs at this time?
Right now? No, actually, I think it's the Navy.
But I don't know, these aircraft I don't think will fly off a carrier. Of course, we don't have a carrier, but in the funny event that maybe 20 years down the road we do get one, you know, get a carrier and a sub, it would certainly be nice to add to our Navy.
Yeah, and given the type of situations that we're in Afghanistan, this is not exactly the type of strike fighter that they're looking for in those conditions. That's some of the criticism that I've heard. This is
well,
not exactly.
Well, yeah, you hear that, but this, you know, at least with the F-35, which I think will be the CF-35, becomes Canadian, I think that the military this time really likes it. And we've had trouble with the military and the government in the past when it comes to procurement of equipment for the armed forces. Now they just agreed on the two ships, the two providers, which we're not going to get for what, 4 and 8 years, and the ship that we two that we have currently are 41 years old. I mean,
we have
that's
three.
That's an old Navy, 41 years.
Yeah, the oldest one is, I think, Provider.
Provider,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, Provider is about 41 years old. We
yeah.
have three of them. One of them is in dry dock, and the other two do their service on both coasts. They're rotated that way. But at the same time, once again, the Navy promise for three ships is actually going to turn out to be two service,
yeah.
Service provider vessels. And there'll still be a question as to how they'll meet the demands of the Navy once they go into service, because they're going to be missing that third ship. And remember, this isn't a new promise of these vessels. This is something that was announced in 2006, and the Conservatives withdrew. The Cabinet decided not to go ahead with it because they weren't satisfied with what they were seeing by way of costs, and they weren't satisfied with what they were seeing by way of actual vessels that would be constructed.
And Dennis, politics plays a big role too, and I don't think it should when you're talking about the protection of your country and the freedom of its citizens. You know, well, they argue about where the spares are going to be manufactured. I want them manufactured in Brandon, Manitoba. They go, I want them manufactured in Summerside, PEI. So you get all these cabinet members fighting about where they're going to go. You know, why don't they think about us for a change? I don't care where the hell they build them or where the spares come from. I don't care. I just want to tell my kids, hey guys, you're safe today. If
mm-hmm.
someone invades our shores, you're safe today.
Well,
so
once again, the question
shores.
Last week was, who's going to invade our shores?
I'm sorry, you were both talking.
The same question from both of us, Joe. Who is going to invade our shores?
Who's going to?
Yeah.
I have no idea, but back in 1940, nobody thought that Japan was going to invade the shores of the United States. And, you know, that's a little-known fact of history. The Japanese did land in the United States.
Of the Aleutian Islands.
That's right. They were there for 3 years.
Yeah, yeah. Can we change subjects, Jamie, being that you're the moderator here? I've got something that I want to... This is.
You guys got something against aircraft, eh?
No, I've got nothing against aircraft. I think that it's...
I'm just joking.
The bait is going to be out there for a little bit of time as to what's happening with this acquisition. And
well, I hope it doesn't run in the... I hope it doesn't go the way of the helicopters, that's all.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a disaster.
It would be interesting to see. Well, the Cormorant was a helicopter was ahead of its time, and it exceeded the needs and the budget of what the government set aside. And remember, at that time, the government was much in the same financial situation that it is today, except that they were spending, what was it, $39 million an hour more than they were taking in. And
yeah.
Today the government is in a deficit situation, but the spending for these procurements are stretched out over such a period of time that hopefully our economy will be in a little bit better shape that we'll be able to absorb it. And but what I wanted to ask, and Joe, because you are such a great patriot, I hope that you'll join me, because I've already done this.
I've got my flag flying.
Okay. I've
Canadian flag, by the way.
I'm glad to hear that. I have one at the cottage as well. But I have this website I want the both of you to check out. It's www.bringbacktheact.ca. And what this is that the British North America Act, the Constitution Act of 1867, this is what created Canada, is locked up in a vault in London, England. Canadians don't get to see it.
Yep.
There is a movement afoot to bring back the Act so that it will have a permanent home here in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
and that Canadians will be able to see the original document that created this great land. And the idea is to try to get enough people to sign a petition online to encourage the government to act so that in 1864, possibly it could land on the shores of Prince Edward Island and be on display in Charlottetown and then Quebec City, which were the home of the two first conferences with regards to Confederation, and then make its way to Ottawa in time for July 1st, 2017, when we celebrate 150 years.
I have it up on my computer right now. I'm looking at it.
I just signed it.
Dennis, this is a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm. I think everybody should be signing this. Do it.
Exactly. It's a no-brainer.
You know,
well, we'll have to do a story on it in the Cornwall Free News and let get it more exposed for people around here.
You just tell your readers of the Cornwall Free News that Dennis Sabry and Joe Gunn, particularly Joe Gunn first, is encouraging all your readers to go online, sign this petition. Let's do this. Like Joe says, it's a no-brainer. I want to see my constitution that created my country here in Ottawa. It's interesting, this website that Joe's at probably points out that the Magna Carta is on display in London. The American Constitution is on display in the United States, in Washington. The Australian Constitution, which is also originally was being stored in London, England. Well, the British lent it to the Australians, and then the Australians simply told them, we're not giving it back, it's ours. And that's how they got their constitution. I think we won't have to be quite that subtle. We can just let them know that we would like them to give it back to us and bring it back to Canada. The British will argue that it is their document, but it's their document that created our country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it belongs here, not locked up in a vault somewhere. Few people even realize that our constitution was written on animal skin. That's how precious this document is.
Well, the government's been skinning us ever since.
But, Jamie, by all means, put a story up on the Cornwall Free News and let people know that this is something that they should be acting on. They should feel as strongly and as patriotically as Joe and I do, and let's see our Constitution come home.
Well, and as a patriotic Canadian myself, I'm happy to do that. I've already put it on our Facebook and Twitter feed, so that's already going out live this morning, and we'll certainly do a story on that.
Great, great. I'm glad to hear that.
I have now signed it too, Dennis.
Good stuff. There's a confirmation page that comes back for your from your signature, and it encourages you to add any comments that you want. And I know that Joe will put something very thought-provoking on his comment.
God save the Queen.
There you go.
That works.
Well, it's very traditional.
Mm-hmm.
She's a nice lady.
Now, Michael Ignatieff was in Cornwall last week.
Yes.
And, Dennis, you were flipping burgers.
I was. And somehow or other, that picture made its way into this Cornwall Free News. I'll never understand this.
That was one of the defining moments of the evening for me, was you flipping burgers, so...
Well, I promised Joe that I'd make him his burger, and unfortunately, I think the weather kept Joe away.
It was the rain that got me. Rain drives me nuts. The funny thing about this, the bus broke down.
Yeah.
And that's the lead story. That is garbage from the media, and I don't care what anybody says. That's not the lead story, but it was.
Yep, it was, and it was unfortunate because, it missed the... we had an excellent crowd in Cornwall, and people were more than impressed with Mr. Ignatieff's speech. He was speaking off the cuff, straight from the heart, and telling them what he was thinking. And he is resonating well on this tour because people are discovering the true Michael Ignatieff, that is not just visiting, but someone that actually does care and wants to help make a difference. And, Joe, you talk about the bus. I can recall, once again, Joe Clark having his luggage lost on him. I don't, I've always felt he got a bad rap for that. I can recall airplanes being held on tarmacs on national tours during election campaigns because of a safety concern or something, you know, a glitch in it, in the equipment or something like that, holding back Pierre Trudeau and Ed Broadbent. And that didn't become lead stories on the election coverage at those days. All of a sudden now, a bus breaks down from a reputable company that has a strong, you know, a fleet of fairly new vehicles, and all of a sudden it's the big story. It could have happened to anyone.
Exactly. And this one thing I disagree. I hate the press when it comes to that. They zero in on something like the bus broke down. Why don't they zero in on how he feels about the purchase of F-35 fighters, like we were just discussing?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, here's the other follow-up to the bus broke down, and the repairs were made by a gentleman who operates a garage on Highway 34 that happens to have the name of Harper.